And counsel for the appellant.
May it please the court. Chief Judge Baker, members of this court, my name is Captain Robert Meek. Along with Major Amy Neiman, we represent the appellant in this case.
Counsel, could you speak up a little?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Can you hear in the back?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they're giving you a yes back there, just not up here.
Thank you.
You can choose which audience you want to talk to.
My name is Captain Robert Meek. Along with Major Amy Neiman, we represent the appellant in this case, Private First Class James Pierce. We ask that you dismiss the charge and specification against Private First Class Pierron because the military judge abused her discretion in two ways. First, she allowed the government, she ruled admissible coerced evidence in violation of Private First Class Pierron's Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. And second, she allowed the government to use that illegally obtained evidence to improperly impeach Private First Class Pierron well beyond the scope of his directive. This court set the standard for admissibility for allegedly coerced statements in U.S. v. Murphy. The DNA evidence and resulting statements from PFC Pierron were coerced. Now, if you look at the Murphy factors, the two best Murphy factors in favor of the accused are the first and the fifth. Private First Class Pierron was in a holding cell or in handcuffs for the previous 12 hours before the CID agent asked him for his consent. And while the CID agent was asking for his consent, Private First Class Pierron asked that CID agent twice, should I speak with a lawyer? And instead of saying, well, you have that right, the CID agent rebuffed him and said, we'll get to that later. I'll advise you of your rights when I bring you in for questioning later. Private First Class Pierron was also 18 years old at the time that he was asked for his consent. He had been in Germany for barely a month, straight out of advanced individualized training. This is his first.
You're focusing on the second issue first?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why is the, in the end, why is it or is it not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt?
It's not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, Your Honor, because the government relied heavily on the accused credibility. The DNA evidence and the resulting statements were used in the government's case in chief and also used in the government's rebuttal case. The government on its closing parked time and again that the accused believability is
so you thought it, you, in your view, it spills over into the charges for which he was convicted?
Yes, Your Honor.
And not just the charge for which he was acquitted?
Yes, Your Honor. If the government had advised Private First Class Pierron of his rights and not gotten that DNA evidence through coercion, there would be no statements to then improperly impeach him.
Oh, turning then to issue one.
Yes, Your Honor, I can go that way if you want, or I can talk again about how everything was coerced.
He signed the consent form, didn't he?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there anything irregular about the consent form?
No, Your Honor. The consent form was regular, but the circumstances surrounding that form and the signature do not show consent. The signature is there, but the factors around it are different.
Primarily 2 and 5.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
1 and 5.
1 and 5, rather.
How do you get around the fact that the military judge found that he actually considered his options and opted to sign it?
The military judge, when she ruled it admissible, she said that the pause before signing it showed that he, as you said, he considered it. However, there's no, the pause, the defense argued that pause shows a hesitancy. And so that finding of fact is erroneous because there's no evidence that when Private First Class Pierron took the stand, he said, oh, well, I paused and I can weigh my options. He said, I felt pressured. I felt like the CID agent heard my request to speak with an attorney and he ignored me. So the factors surrounding the other things don't show that hesitation was weighing his options.
So that was an erroneous finding by the military judge?
Yes, Your Honor. So the third factor of Murphy also weighs in the appellant's favor, but his awareness to write or refuse based on his age and intelligence. When he asked if Excuse me. The CID agent never told him that he was free to leave. In fact, he had been in police custody for the previous 12 hours. The military police drove him to the troop medical clinic, and then at that point, the CID agent took the handcuffs off. So within 5 minutes, the CID agent has shown that he is in control rather than private first class care.
He was advised of his right, that it was up to him, right?
The only thing that he was advised of, according to the CID agent, Your Honor, is that he did not have to consent.
Right. And is there any indication that he didn't read the form?
That, I do not believe that that was any indication.
Okay.
And he was told multiple times it was voluntary, was he not?
One was, according to the CID agent, Your Honor, one was after he had already signed the form. But both of those were after private first class parent asked if he needed to speak with a lawyer. So there's some tension between, well, you don't have to consent, versus, well, we'll get to that later.
He's of normal intelligence, isn't he?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, he's 18 years old.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Very inexperienced with both the world and the Army.
Do you think you need to win on issue two to prevail on issue one?
No.
Is that the door you're going through?
It would be the greatest way to succeed, Your Honor, but even if this court finds that those statements and resulting evidence were not coerced, it was still beyond the improper impeachment was still beyond the scope. So if you find that it was coerced, then we went for issue two and issue one. If you find that it was not coerced, we could still win on issue one. Now turning to issue one, when the private first class parent took the stand in his own defense, he discussed what happened that night with Specialist KW. And the defense specifically kept the door shut as to what happened after, and specifically what happened with the Major Sanders. So when the...
And when you say he particularly kept the door shut, didn't he make comments to Master Sergeant Bartles? Didn't he make comments to the German Polizei about what had happened?
He did, Your Honor, and that was within he testified to that on direct. So that would be a proper impeachment if it was not a comment on his right to remain silent. At that point, the government attempted to use his basically lack of spilling his guts, telling his full story prior to his being Mirandized as improper impeachment. And that's an improper comment on his right to remain silent, which the defense objected to, and the military judge overruled. But that's not why we're here today. Here today because the scope objection, because what happened with the same nurse was not at issue in the direct testimony. The defense limited it to stop even before they got to the same nurse.
But they're trying to limit it by chronologically limited, right? But doesn't the case law make it pretty clear that once you put yourself in issue, you can't limit it by saying, oh, I just want to talk about what happened on Monday but nothing else?
Your Honor, the case law, specifically Haven, says that matters plainly within the scope of direct are open for impeachment. So what happened the next day when he's talking to somebody else is not plainly within the scope. And what they impeached him on was not what he told the sexual assault nurse examiner. It's the fact whether he told that person or not.
But he's being asked about the events in question, correct? Is that not the topic?
That is the topic, Your Honor.
So, therefore, is not anything relating to the events in question fair game? Like, what happened after the event in question? What did you do next?
Well, the main problem with that, Your Honor, is that he was not advised of 31 Bravo, so those statements were coerced. You have a major talking to a private first class. So, as this court well knows from...
No, but that's a separate issue than what is fair game on redirect. That gets into your 304 issue. But your first issue, your first argument is you're not allowed to talk about anything I didn't bring up. And putting aside whether what you're bringing up was warned or not warned. But your first argument essentially is if I only talk about what happened prior to the train station, you're not allowed to ask any questions about what happened after the train station. And I'm testing the limits of that argument.
Right, Your Honor. If it's coerced, it's not usable for any.
Is this a 611 argument or is this a self-incrimination argument?
It's more of a 304b1 argument, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I believe it's changed now with the new.
Well, I'm not going to hold you to that.
So does that mean you're accepting that 611B opens the door to credibility questions. And then the question is whether those credibility questions pass 304B1 muster, which I'm sure everybody can follow clearly.
It would be credibility questions about matters the accused himself has put in direct controversy.
Well, it says limited to the subject matter of the direct examination and matters affecting the credibility of the witness. Why did they have two different things if it's just matters of direct examination?
The Supreme Court in Doyle v. Ohio overruled the lower court because the lower court said that improper impeachment goes to credibility. That's the hook that the lower court hung on.
So did the Supreme Court address Rule 611B in that case?
No, Your Honor. No,
okay. It was our job to look at 611B?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So are matters affecting the credibility of the witness permissible under 611B?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So then your argument is, are you saying it passes 611B but doesn't pass 304? I know you want to win on every rule and every...
Your Honor, I'll just say this. 304, read with the Supreme Court's case law on impeachment of the matters the accused has put in controversy, read together, do not allow this broad of a scope on cross-examination.
Well, counsel, his counsel at trial, right, appellant's counsel at trial had him describe what had happened, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
How is it outside the scope to cross-examine him as to whether that's the same story that he told to someone else?
Because the logical extension of that, Your Honor, would be every time the accused talked to someone about the incident, then that would be admissible no matter how illegal the evidence.
No,
that's a 304B issue, not a 611 issue.
That's a different question. Oh. That requires us to find that you're correct on issue two, right? That his consent was coerced and everything derivative of it has to be kept out for every purpose.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if we don't agree with you on that, let's just pretend for a moment that we're not going to agree with you on that. What's your argument as to why you can't use this on cross-examination? I mean, if he's gotten up and said nothing, obviously it couldn't be used.
Right.
But
yes,
once he gets up and tells his side of the story, the fact that he told someone else a different story, how is that outside the scope?
It was the same, Your Honor. It was consistent with what he told on direct. So if there's nothing...
Well, so if it's consistent, even if it... Where's the prejudice?
Well, then they bring back the lieutenant colonel on rebuttal saying, no, he never told me that. So it's putting the cart before the horse. They're setting him up for improper impeachment.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
You
lost me.
We're past the 611 wicket, right?
Right, Your Honor.
Or accept that we are. You don't have to concede it, but accept that we're past the 611 wicket. His credibility is at stake, because if he told a different story to someone else, that raises an issue of credibility.
Yes, Your Honor.
In theory.
Yes, but I would... Go ahead.
You're now saying, but the additional and more problematic aspect of this is that the story, the rebuttal now brings up material that's involuntary under 304. Is that what you're arguing?
So...
What is it that's involuntary under 304?
Any statements he made or may not have made to the major.
And there seems to be a dispute between you and the government over whether the contradiction at issue is the silence or what was said to the nurse.
It's both, Your Honor. There are four questions that the government wanted to highlight and the accused answers. It was about reaching out with a hand, whether she kissed him, whether he touched her breast, paraphrasing, things like that. But the government also argued impeachment by omission, saying, well, you didn't tell him that she reached out your hand to you. You didn't tell her those things.
But what if the government's responding to what he had said? What they're contradicting is his testimony on cross.
Can you say that?
You follow, this is like trying to figure out what 215 program's about. We have one hop, two hop, and three hops. Isn't the government contradicting his testimony when he was cross-examined?
Yes, Your Honor. Because...
And why isn't that permissible?
Because that's... The omission would be an improper comment on his right to remain silent. The contradiction, those statements in contradiction, are the result of coercion. So, moving beyond that to the scope issue, the matters that PFC Peeran put in issue are what happened that night, not the discussions with the nurse. So, if Private First Class Peeran talks about, I told the nurse I wasn't even there, and then they try to bring back, and so they contradict him on that, that is different. What happened here is he's testifying consistently. Most of the cases result in a sweeping denial on direct of, well, I've never seen drugs, or I didn't help him, things like that, and then the government brings back illegally obtained evidence or something like that. That's not what we have here. We have consistent testimony, and then the government sets him up for improper impeachment.
But on cross-examination, does he not state that he told the nurse those four facts?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Why isn't that fair game to impeach?
Because the defense objected based on the scope.
No, but that's... Okay, but once we're past 611...
Right.
Once we're past 611, let's stipulate that it is within the scope.
Okay, right.
Why can't the government now impeach that by calling the same nurse and saying, did he say those things that he said on cross-examination?
At that point, then it would be only based on coercion, illegally obtained evidence.
So now we're back to prong two.
Right, Your
Honor. Okay.
You're back to issue two.
Issue two, okay.
If you hold that as within the scope...
Okay, then you've got to win on issue two. Okay,
Okay.
But if you hold that it's not within the scope, then issue one can stay...
Well, assuming it's within the
scope. I'm sorry, it took me 20 minutes to get to that. But.
Yeah.
Well, it's tricky because there's... Yeah, okay.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, I will...
Are there further questions?
Thank you.
Reserve time on rebuttal.
Yes,
thank
yes,
you,
sir.
Counsel. Counsel for the government, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is M. Daniel Karna, along with Major Stephen Collins. We represent the United States in this case. The military judge did not commit plain error as defense affirmatively waived any objection to the four rebuttal questions posed to the nurse examiner, Lieutenant Colonel Hollenbaum. Moreover, there is no abuse of discretion concerning the overruling of defenses outside the scope of objection, as appellant opened the door when he testified to a consensual encounter initiated by the victim. Appellant's testimony on direct is sufficiently inconsistent and contrary to what he reported to the nurse examiner, and government's cross-examination questions were reasonably suggested by appellant's testimony.
What's the contradiction? I mean, it sounded to me like he said the same thing, and if anything, he corroborated it.
The contradiction, Your Honor, is on direct, he presents in detail a consensual encounter where he's going through all the different things that they apparently consensually did together. And then when he goes and talks to the nurse examiner, during the examination he consented to, he presents basically that there's certain things he says he does and he doesn't do, but at the same time, it doesn't go along with the extreme detail that he went into.
So what? So what? He told a larger story to one and a smaller story. He didn't include everything. So what?
Well, specifically...
Where do they contradict each other? It sounds like, if anything, they corroborate. Well, and you know, as that may go to prejudice, but I don't follow what we're talking about here.
Well, for instance, if you look at the form that Lieutenant Colonel Hollenbaum used and also the Section 3 disclosures, some of the statements made were that appellant was too drunk to remember and things like that, of that nature. If you match that up with, apparently if he was too drunk to remember the day after the incident when he met with Lieutenant Colonel Hollenbaum, how is he going to remember all these intricate details about how they, you know, she led him to the...
Too drunk to remember when? I assume by the next day it's worn off, and he may have a splitting headache, but I...
Well, it's just that the testimony on direct during the trial, however many months later, was in extreme detail, but then when he goes to Lieutenant Colonel Allenbaugh, he doesn't present anything that is necessary consensual, but for it, except maybe that one question about where he says, oh, she kissed my ear, that could potentially go to consent.
It's the government's view, then, that the contradiction that is otherwise, that is permitted by 304B1, then, is a contradiction with the direct testimony, not with the cross-examination testimony?
Well, there's two parts. The first part, which is the testimony that appellant gave on direct, that was contradicted through what we're just talking about. The second component is then on cross.
Well, the government brings in the same nurse, right? That's what's at issue here, was whether the same nurse can come in, correct? Is that ultimately what is it, as an impeachment witness, and say the things she did?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the second part.
And she is contradicting, in your view, the direct testimony or the cross-examination testimony? And your answer is?
Her four questions and answers were contradicting the cross-examination directly. But I think what appellant is trying to argue is to get to that step, you first need to ask yourself, well, whether or not the scope of objection was sufficient to say, hey, look, appellant can start, you know, getting in their side of the story and talk to all these points.
But why are we even into the issue of contradiction if we're dealing with the scope question?
I think they're intertwined, Your Honor, because at the four rebuttal questions that were asked on cross-examination were asked because those four things were brought up on direct. So appellant initially brought those statements up on direct on his own.
Did he?
So that brought, helped.
How did he bring them up on direct?
Did he
say he said those things to the same nurse on direct?
He specifically said, Your Honor, that he and the specialist KW, the victim, had done these things. So essentially government was coming in to say, hey, look, you said that, or now you're saying all these, you know, detailed description about what happened. But now when you compare it to what you allegedly said to Lieutenant Colonel Allenbaugh, it doesn't match. And government probably didn't even know exactly what he was going to answer to. He might have said, no, I didn't say those things, and that was the end of it. But it's at that point where he said, yes, I specifically told her that she kissed me. Yes, I specifically told her that she kissed my ear. Yes, that she touched my penis and rubbed it vigorously for 5 minutes. Those four things, when he said specifically, yes, those four things, those were direct contradictions, which were proper for rebuttal.
But did his direct testimony contradict what the impeachment witness was going to say, or is this impeachment by omission?
Impeachment by omission, it seems to go along with that. You know, the language of MRA 304B1 says contradicts by impeachment. So I think appellant tries to draw this distinction that impeachment by omission is somehow different from impeachment by contradiction. But we have case law, like a brief, that shows that it's actually a subcategory of that.
But those cases don't deal with the military rules of evidence, and 304B1 specifically says they're talking about the in-court testimony of the accused, not what he didn't say.
That is true, Your Honor, but at the same time, if we look at Supreme Court's cases, such as Harris, Hass, and Havens, the last of which appellant cited in their subsite, and those cases show that all you need is for the defendant's direct examination has to be, the government's cross-examination must be reasonably suggested by defendant's direct examination. So it's just reasonably suggested. It doesn't have to be a direct contradiction here.
Have we held that? Has this court held the reasonable? What is it? What was your term?
It was the term used in U.S. v. Havens, Your Honor. To quote it, it's a defendant's statements made in response to a proper cross-examination probably suggested by defendant's direct examination are subject to otherwise improper impeachment. So, as long as the direct testimony, and this goes to why government could ask the questions to begin with that led to the four rebuttal questions that were a direct contradiction, all it has to do is be reasonably suggested by...
Why does not mentioning something reasonably suggest that he may have said something different at another time?
Well, because there are two different stories. On one hand, you know, the story at the time, right after the incident, where he goes to Lieutenant Colonel Hollenbach, you know, doesn't really go into these extreme details that he does during his testimony at trial. And then, whatever it was, months, almost a year later at trial, then he all of a sudden remembers all these things when he apparently said and noted on the form that he was too drunk to remember. He wasn't sure. So it's contradicting. It's not a direct contradiction as we have the last four questions that are eventually asked. But it's enough of a contradiction to show that, hey, these two stories don't really match up.
Counsel, in your view, would your approach to this mean that virtually every time that an accused testifies and there's an otherwise inadmissible statement, that the government would be able to get that statement in?
No, Your Honor, we wouldn't go that far. And I think the case...
Can you draw distinctions between this case and those instances where you feel that there would be some sort of barrier to introducing that otherwise inadmissible statement?
Well, Your Honor, I would go and say that it's more about, you know, appellant tries to draw a distinction between limiting the scope temporally. I'm only going to talk about these things up until this point, and then that limits it. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Case law says that it's more a content case. The subject matter of the cross or the direct is what matters. So if you have a subject matter that comes in where he's talking about basically his version of events and they all amount to this, that then is reasonably suggested by government's cross-examination in this case, and that's allowed in other cases. So essentially, we loop back, long story short, Your Honor, to direct this court's attention to U.S. v. Havens and the rule that was adopted from both Hass and also Supreme Court cases in the 1970s.
Could you move to number two?
Yes, sir.
This seems to be pretty evenly balanced as to the indicia of voluntariness. He's deprived of his liberty. No question about that. He asked for a lawyer and is brushed off. He's told, we'll talk about that later. The guy is armed. On the other hand, he's 18 years old and he's in the service, and there doesn't seem to be any indicia of mental retardation or anything like that. So where does that leave us? I'm pretty troubled by the fact that he asked for a lawyer and he got blown off in a obviously custodial situation.
Well, Your Honor, the military judge, she didn't make any clearly erroneous findings of fact. She weighed the evidence, she used the correct test, and she acknowledged those same points you brought up, Your Honor. However, she also acknowledged that, on the other hand, the military judge, both Special Agent Harris and on the form itself, appellant was notified about his constitutional right to decline participation in the exam. Especially Agent Harris actually told him, not only before signing the form, but again after, basically, you don't have to do this. This is of your own free will. And, you know, appellant thought about it. And that hesitation, yeah, it could be argued that maybe he was thinking about, you don't want to do it. Well, that probably was the case.
Maybe he was thinking about, how the hell did I get in this jam? The fact that he hesitated, I think, is neither here nor there.
I agree, Your Honor. It would also show that he was actually thinking about, do I want to consent to this or not? So that would show voluntariness.
Well, or it could show nothing.
But at the end of the day, there's also, the military judge found there's You know, no repeated or prolonged nature of questioning, coercion or intimidation beyond the duty revolver or handgun that he is required to have. I mean, he wasn't in uniform. He had a suit on, so presumably he couldn't see the brand. There's no diminished mental state. He was sober at that point. There's no physical punishment, deprivation, such as food or sleep. They have all those other factors as well that the military judge said, okay, we have these bad factors. We have these, you know, bad for the government, some factors that are good for the government. But at the end of the day, the standard is, did she abuse her discretion? And she didn't make any, again, clearly erroneous findings of fact that I could find and think appellant plainly won. But there's nothing there that shows that, you know, she abused her discretion in just weighing both sides, and she came to a decision. And I believe this court should respect that, respect of the hearing.
Back to one for a moment.
Yes, sir.
On 304B1, does it matter whether the statement is involuntary as a matter of Article 31 and the Fifth Amendment, or involuntary? What if it were involuntary for the purposes of Article 31? I mean, not, yes, for the purpose of Article 31, but not for the Fifth Amendment. Involuntary.
I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, let me try it again. I didn't understand it either. Does the statement come in even if it violates the Fifth Amendment?
Yes, sir.
So involuntary encompasses all aspects of involuntary. Was in custody, wasn't in custody, violated Article 31, but didn't violate Fifth Amendment, did violate Article 31 and Fifth Amendment.
I mean,
there's no distinction in terms of the application of 304.
Not to the military. The only thing I can think of, Your Honor, is a case, Oregon v. Hass, that dealt with where the Miranda rights, Miranda rights were correctly read, but at the same time he asked for an attorney, specifically, unequivocally, and then he made a statement, oh, the bikes that he stole were in the bushes over here.
Then what does only in terms of noncompliance with the requirements of 305 blah, blah, blah mean? The rule goes on where the statement is involuntary only in terms of noncompliance with the requirements of Rule 305, subsections, blah, blah, blah. How does that qualify the application of 304? There's two issues here. One, do you understand the question? Two, what's the answer?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I still don't understand.
Your answer basically is 304 is unqualified in any way then. If it's an involuntary statement, it comes in if it's being used to impeach by contradiction, period.
Yes, Your Honor. The only standard we have is that it says a contradiction by impeachment, but that has to be read under the case law that's established by the Supreme Court.
So any involuntary statement comes in if it satisfies statement to impeach by contradiction?
Yes, Your Honor.
In the government's view? Okay.
Subject to any further questions? That concludes my brief.
Thank you, counsel. There's now opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel, what's your answer to the question on 304B1? Any involuntary statement comes in provided it is used to impeach by contradiction, or is there qualification to that?
There's qualification to that.
What is the qualification?
The qualification is that it must be a technical violation of the rules, not a constitutional violation of the rules.
So if someone were in custody, and everybody agrees they're in custody, and it's a Miranda violation, then the involuntary statement cannot come in.
You say that one more time, Your Honor?
If in a hypothetical case, not this one, everybody, the government and the appellant agree that the person was in custody and there was a violation of the Fifth Amendment right to silence, that could not come in under 304B1, in your view?
Those are the facts of Oregon v. Haas, Your Honor, and 304B1, I think, recognizes the special problems that the military has with rank structure and compulsion. So the Supreme Court said that's okay under federal civilian law only, but 304b1, I would argue, gives an additional protection. In fact, this court held in Swift that the accused is the gatekeeper as to the admission of the unwarned statement. They don't say illegal or coerced statement, they say unwarned, and that only an inconsistent or perjurious statement by the accused who testified at the trial opens the gate. Here, the defense specifically kept that door shut, and the government tries to go in through a window. Now,
Counsel, we're talking here about 611B, and we've talked a lot about being beyond the scope, but if you read 611B, it says that it limits cross-examination to the subject matter of direct examination and the credibility of the witness. Here, it seems, everybody agrees we're talking about the credibility of the witness. Why does it matter whether they're within or without the scope of direct examination?
Because, Your Honor, there are special protections for an accused who takes the stand. If it's just a general witness, that's what...
But you can still impeach an accused.
Yes, Your Honor. But the general rule is certain things are inadmissible, and these cases are exceptions to that general rule. The government has not pointed to factors or cases that allow these statements to come in because they are different from
the protected. You're arguing now that they're protected? That they're unwarned? Is that where you're getting
right? The first argument is that they are unwarned. Or excuse me. The first argument is that they're coerced and therefore inadmissible for any purpose. The second argument is that if you find that they are not coerced, they are still unwarned. Although I would argue it's still a constitutional protection; it's not a mere technical violation. So then the scope objection was the proper thing. So, but it's credibility about matters that the defense himself has put an issue. The Supreme Court held in James v. Illinois that the current exception leaves defendants free to testify truthfully on their own behalf. They can offer probative and exculpatory evidence without opening the door to impeachment by carefully avoiding any statements that directly contradict the suppressed evidence.
On cross-examination, can you ask questions going to the credibility of an accused that have nothing to do with the scope of direct examination?
If the only way to impeach is from illegal evidence, no, Your Honor.
Okay, so with that caveat.
Right, there must be another way to impeach in order to properly impeach a case.
And if there's no illegal evidence, then that's okay.
That's okay, Your Honor. I mean, they did it properly when they brought in the boyfriend who said, I never took off his shoe because he testified on direct. Somebody, I think the boyfriend took off my shoes. That's proper. What's improper here is the government set up a straw man and then attacked its own scarecrow. That's Justice Brennan, that's not me. If there are no further questions.
The court thanks both counsel. The case is now submitted and will stand in recess until 10:20. Thank you very much.
Court stands in recess until 10:20.